Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... Alrighty guys, welcome back to another week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. It's still hot, but man, I tell you what, the other day I got out there on the water and I felt a little cool snap in there. I think it was in the 70s, so hopefully that bodes good things. We got some good reports coming in this week, leading the charge. We got Alex Davis up there on Lake Gunnersville. Alex, how about it?
How are you doing today?
Man, I'm doing good, man. Been a productive week at work. Got a little fishing done over the weekend. Felt well rested. So, you know how that is. If you have a good weekend and you get you a nap in and you get some fishing, you just hit the week fresh.
Yeah, no, I got me a nap in this weekend as well. Fishing, it's still hot outside. I think the water's like 86. But what's weird is I guess just a couple of cool nights I saw actually the first schooling activity of the year. They're not big fish that school them, but they're, you know, they come up in pods that look like probably 50 yards long. Most of them's 14 inches, you know, 15 inches. So they're fun. You can catch them on little small stuff. That was the main thing I figured out. You couldn't catch them on larger stuff. They're feeding on such little shad. You have to throw like rooster tails, little spoons, itty bitty swim baits, like 2 point, you know, like a 2.5 inch Crush City Mayor. It's real small stuff.
And I tell you what, them little rooster tails, that's some of my all-time favorite lures. Back in the day when I used to squirrel hunt more, I don't know if you know MEPS, they have a program where you can trade squirrel tails. If you skin them and dry them, you can ship them to MEPS and they'll either pay you cash for them, and it's next to nothing. It's like 5 cents a tail, right? But if you trade for store credit towards lures, you get like 25 cents a tail. And I used to fish with a lot of MEPS back in the day, yeah, when I was in college.
Now that it's a forgotten lure that not a lot of people even think about, but when they're feeding on that itty bitty stuff, it's an absolute killer. And besides that, there's been still some fish out deeper, like deeper grass lines, catching the most on forward facing sonar. A lot of them on like the Crush City, the Freeloader, Jig Head Minnow stuff. Caught some on a speed worm last week. That was kind of fun. Seemed like that's better of a morning and evening bite. First couple hours, 2.5 hours of daylight you get out deeper grass lines, and that like some of the grass lines in 7, some of them in 11. Really just depends on what section of the lake you're in. Just covering a bunch of water with the speed worm, and that was fun. And did catch some fish finally punching. Haven't really caught a lot doing it this year. And I think this is just the very beginning of it. Some good quality, but not a lot of bites. You know, it's been the typical punching deal where you have 10, 12 bites in a day, but the average is real good. So that makes it fun. Now the heat, that hurts your attitude while you're punching. It's just so hot while you're doing it, but you do get rewarded every once in a while.
Talk to me a little bit. What's kind of your strategy and your gear that you use when you're punching?
When I'm punching, I use a 7-8 extra heavy Shimano Corrado rod, 55-pound Power Pro, an 1.5 ounce tungsten sinker. I use a 3-0 CMC Redline flipping hook. I like a little adrenaline crawl. It's just from Crush City. It's just a small little crawl. Got some little appendages. They kind of flap in the water. That, to me, is the best. And once you get your setup done, I throw like a little 70 Corrado. It's just Shimano Corrado 70 XG. And the reason I want things light as I can is when you're doing it all day, you want as less fatigue as humanly possible. So when you go with a 70 size reel and that rod, I mean, it's still an extra heavy rod and it's long, but it's not a lot in the hand. So it definitely helps as far as if you're just doing it all day, it's just easier to do in your body. And the hardest thing about it is like when I get people that come on trips, you know, I tell them, well, we're just going to go. And you virtually just get on the edge of the mat and you just take off flipping, which is, you don't know where they're going to be. It's kind of a surprise. They use the same general areas every year, but they don't use the same spots every year. So just because you caught them, let's say on this waypoint last year, I mean, you can pretty much do away with it just because the grass grows different every year, it grows deeper, it doesn't grow there at all. You just got to put your trolling motor and go, which is, I love it. A lot of people hate it because it's not the – you can't look at a map and say right there is where they ought to be. That doesn't happen. So you really have to – to me, I call it old school fishing because forward-facing sonar doesn't help you. You know, you just have to go do it. That's the only way you're going to find them, which I really enjoy, but a lot of people don't enjoy it. But, I mean, I think it's a kick in the pants.
That's something I need to get into more. We got, especially on the lower side of the Mobile Tensaw, we got a lot of real heavy vegetation where I feel like that strategy would really pay off. It's just not something I've really dove into a lot myself. And part of it is just because like I've hooked some fish up in really thick, heavy vegetation like that. And it's just rough to get them out. Like, I think that's something I still struggle with. I spend more time with light tackle, throwing, like you were saying, the little rooster tails and stuff like that. And it's just a different mindset. You know, the idea of ripping fish out of that salad, right, with 65-pound braid, other than just, you know, brute force and just trying to get them out as quick as possible, you got any tips on ripping fish out of thick vegetation like that?
Well, the biggest thing I can say, and I deal with it a lot because I take my friends doing it, and I got a lot of guide trips, and we do it on guide trips. And the hardest thing for people to realize or comprehend is, I think the most important whole time you're the most important is the very first few seconds. Like when you actually hook him, you want to get him coming. That's the most important thing. Like as soon as you hook him, you want to turn his head and you want his head coming to you. Because like if you set the hook and you don't give it to them and get them coming, they'll get it. Like especially if you let them have too much time in the mat, they'll get down there and it's hard to get them out. But 9 times out of 10, once you feel them on that initial hook set, if you just, I don't really set the hook per se. You know, I don't like slack line them. I just kind of reel down and it's a pull, a pretty good pull and reel in at the same time. And once you get them coming, you can get them out pretty easily. It's when you set the hook and you kind of freeze for a second or you don't realize he's on there and he swims, you know, you flip in the mat. If you let that fish swim 6-7 foot to the side, when you hook him, it's a problem to try to get him out. It's then just brute force and a lot of hoping goes in. But usually that's the first 3 seconds on the hook set. If you can get him and he starts coming, you can get him to the top of the mat, he's pretty much yours at that point.
I got you. Yeah, that's a really good tip, and I guess that makes sense. The more time you give him to figure it out and bury himself up in there, I can see that it definitely starts going more his way than yours.
So they have the advantage from the word go, but you have the equipment to get them out. You just have to be, you kind of have to be Johnny on the spot. That's what I tell people. Once you think you got a bite, you got to hook him and get him coming as soon as possible.
I like it. Well, for people who want to go out this weekend, what's your best tip?
If it was me and I was going out, if you're looking for numbers, I'd start out with like the speed worm, put the troll motor down, try to hit grass points, you know, just the edge of grass points or where there's like little pockets in the grass, and just cover a bunch of water. Usually when you find them, like with the speed worm, it seems like once you get a bite, you're going to get 3 or 4 more bites in that area real quick. So kind of cover water fast, but when you get a bite, really put the brakes on.
I like it. What I know right now, we're in August, and like you said, water temperature is still really high. But you mentioned y'all had a couple cooler nights up there. I know we're going to start slowly seeing that trend towards cooler water. What have anglers got to look forward to up on Lake Gunnersville? How are the fish going to start changing their pattern as we progress into September and October?
From what I can see, we have less mats than what we've had in years past. And usually when it does this, we have a good topwater bite. So we have a really good, either that be a buzzbait, a spook, like the whopper plopper style baits. Usually the less mats we have, the more schooling fish topwater action we get. So kind of a trade-off. I like mats. I like to flip and throw a frog. But the years we don't have a lot of it, then we have an influx in a topwater bite. So you kind of you take the trade-off.
There we go. What's your best tips for topwater fishing? I know that's something, it's kind of like you were saying, like people struggle a lot when you're punching, like with kind of setting the tone for that fight in the first 3 seconds, right? Getting him turned around, getting him to the top of the mat, and you say that people have a problem delaying. I know for me with topwater bites, I've had some guides scold me for the opposite problem, right? Like trying to set the hook too fast on a topwater fish and not giving them time to take it. Has that been your experience, or what? Where do most people go wrong fishing topwater?
On top water, you jerk too quick, and I throw all top waters on braid. And what I like about braid is you don't have to react. If you're throwing a buzz bait and one blows up on it, you just keep reeling. And as soon as you feel it tight, you just, you kind of lean into them and come on with it. You flip like a spook or a whopper plopper. You're twitching it. When he hits it with braid, you can feel everything. Just keep twitching it. And as soon as it stops, you just start reeling. You don't have to set the hook. So if you use braid, it eliminates the fact of having to set the hook, which is, to me, increases your chances of hooking them and increases your chance of landing them, because you do have braid. We have a lot of grass. They will, if you're throwing mono on a spook and one gets it, he will go into grass, and a big one usually will own you. So my biggest tip is no braid and don't set the hook.
There we go. I like it. Well, Alex, is there anything that anglers need to be aware of as far as like in fishing news, current events, any upcoming tournaments, or anything that they need to stay on top of?
As far as tournaments go, there's if you're a tournament fisherman, usually Guntersville has a lot of good tournaments in the fall. I know we have the Spro. It's a big tournament. I don't believe they allow guides or pros, so it's kind of, I'm not going to say amateur because I hate that word in fishing. Because there's going to be a lot of great fishermen that fish it, but there is no guides or pros. And then they have the net bait, which used to be the snag proof tournament. That's always a great tournament. And for any guys who like to go to Smith, they have, I want to call it, it's called Bass Fest. And it's usually right there end of September, October. And it's a really awesome tournament at Smith. And Smith's a great time of year in the fall. So got some good, really good tournaments coming this year.
Good deal. What about, and I'm not sure if you mess with any, but I know that up there on the Tennessee River, that's kind of the waterfowl capital of Alabama. You pay any attention to teal season when it comes in here in September?
I don't. I've always told, I get that question a lot if I duck hunt or anything, and I tell people I don't have a problem with ducks. They've never done anything to me. So I actually enjoy watching them, and I think they're cool. Other people like to hunt them and kill them, and I got no problem with it. I'm a turkey hunter and a deer hunter, but I got no problem with ducks, so I don't do any kind of duck or turkey hunting or dirt duck or goose hunting. I know they usually have an early goose season, and that usually gets people pretty fired up out there, so I think it's coming up soon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I played some with some geese last year, and I got to say, I'm not as mad as ducks as I used to be. Something about having a kid and missing some sleep will kind of calm you down on it. But now, if you ever find yourself down here, let me know. I think I might can get you hooked on duck hunting too. If you're a turkey hunter, you got potential.
But I'm scared. I think that's what I try to tell people. I'm scared. I don't need another hobby or a habit. So I'm good with where I'm at.
That's smart. I can tell you, I wish that I would have took that angle on it when I was younger, instead of just saying, I think I'm going to do it all. I'm at the point now where I think the only thing I'm not ruining on is turkey hunting. I can let turkey season come and go, but the deer, the ducks, the fish, I got to try to do it all, man. And you definitely only got so many hours in the day to make it all happen. So you're a smart man. Well, Alex, I appreciate you coming on. Appreciate the report. Always a pleasure talking to you. If folks want to book a trip or learn more about the fishery up on Lake Guntersville, what's a good way to get a hold of you?
Best way is either call or text me. My phone number is 256-298-1178. If you want to get on my website, it's www.spinnerbaitkid.com, and my email is spinnerbaitkid@gmail.com. So pretty easy. Calling and texting is by far the easiest thing to do, though.
This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Visit Mississippi. If you're looking for a beautiful state that's packed with outdoor attractions, check out Mississippi. Of course, you know about the Mississippi River, but there are lots of great rivers for paddling throughout the state. Coastal Mississippi's waters are perfect for deep sea fishing or exploring the state's 5 uninhabited barrier islands. You'll find national forests with campgrounds, trails, and recreational sites, 25 parks, and wildlife management areas, too. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi, where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. Alrighty, guys, we're back, and this time we're reporting in with Steve Graziano, talking to the Graz out there on Lake Eufaula. How you doing today, sir?
Oh, Nick, I'm glad you got me here. I just got back from fishing down there. I figured I'd go down there and check it out. And It's getting tough. It's getting tougher right now. August can be a tough month. You know, your water temperature's in 91. Starts out around 86, and it gets up to 91. And the bait is moving around on us. They're kind of breaking up in little packs. The threadfin shad, you know, a month or so ago, they were in big schools. Now they're in smaller schools, and they're in all water columns, too. They're high in the column, they're down, and then they're kind of mid. So it's changing the way the bass set up. So it could be challenging this time of year.
I gotta ask, how are the other captains and the guides out there doing? Is Captain Jack having any luck with them?
Captain Jack, I mean, he is like, he was there this morning. I don't get it. But
I saw you post this past weekend, and man, I tell you what, I don't know that I've ever seen anybody as dedicated as old Captain Jack out there on the old no wake buoy.
Yeah, he's you know, they're creatures of habit, just like bass and all the other animals down there at the wildlife refuge. You know, the alligators, you got the ducks, the mallards. You know, I made a mistake and fed them one time, and now they show up. They know my white boat and my white truck, you know. So I got to have something to feed them, or they'll boycott. So, but you know, it's a challenging time of year. You know, the drop shot is certainly a something good to throw. Today I caught some good ones on a jig, and the Carolina rig has been catching us some fish lately, and also the shaky head in situations. The moving stuff doesn't seem to be doing that well, like a crankbait or a lipless or whatever. They don't seem to want it that bad. So, but every day is different. You know, the problem right now, and it's not really a problem, it's just the weather pattern. It's just hot. There's no rain really in the afternoon. Now, maybe the end of this week we might get some rain, but, you know, the fish will do different things when you got some change in weather. I mean, this morning I got down there and it was just no clouds in the sky. It was just, you know, and it was okay. And then about lunchtime it got brutally hot. So, but fish will eat. I mean, they'll eat in the middle of the day. You'd be surprised. But it's getting slower. But, you know, we're catching them, so that's good too.
For sure. You know, you were talking about fishing shaky heads, Carolina rigs, drop shots. And when you talked about the Carolina rig, I know down here, Carolina rig is really popular with the guys fishing live bait and cut bait, like your inshore anglers and your cat fishermen, your surf fishermen, stuff like that. But
right,
it seems like as a bass rig, it just kind of seems to me like, I know my dad used to fish Carolina rig, and it seems like that's gotten less popular in recent years. Seems like you have more people either drop shotting or fishing, right? Like the Texas rig has always been strong. Have you noticed that? Does it seem like fewer people Carolina rig, or is that just me? Like, it seems like I don't hear as much about that as you used to.
Yeah. I mean, on Eufaula, it can be very advantageous. You know, there's two presentations that basically, as far as a worm is concerned or a bait, plastics, it would be drop shot and Carolina rig. Now, the drop shot, you can adjust the, you know, the height of the bait versus where the, you know, the lead is. And so most times it's 8 inches to a foot is what I do on a drop shot. But a Carolina rig, what you want is a 3/4 or 1 ounce. Certainly 1 ounce is really what I throw, but you can get away with a 3/4. And I like a longer leader. You know, a lot of people use short leaders, but Eufaula has always been better with a 5 or 6 foot leader. Now, you have to practice throwing it, but really what that does for you, it keeps the bait off the bottom better. And how I rig it is I use a monofilament leader. So I go fluorocarbon to the lead and the swivel. And then from there, the leader is a monofilament because it floats. So, and, you know, you can put just about anything on a Carolina rig, a 10-inch worm or a creature bait, or right now we're getting more bites on creature baits. So, but, you know, those are the two baits that will be a suspended, in other words, off the bottom type presentation. Whereas with a jig, you're on the bottom. I know you can hop it or whatever, you know, and that kind of stuff. But just talking about, you know, plastic Texas rig, it's hopping it off the bottom. You know, it doesn't really suspend. It's more of a reaction type deal. But you can use a Carolina rig and get a reaction bite if you know how to do it. You know, it's just a certain way to, you know, most people just drag it, but there's a lot of different ways that you can work a Carolina rig.
I need to fish one more. I know I kind of, one of the reasons I quit fishing them down here is, like you said, they don't cast as well as other rigs. And then they seem like they're a little bit worse about getting tangled. And we got a lot of woody structure down here that just, you kind of end up with some trouble, but it's definitely one of those things. Like, I don't think there's any sense taking it off the table, you know. I'm bad about defaulting to a Texas rig, but like when I went up there with you and you showed me how to fish that drop shot rig, it was something where I'd never had a huge amount of success with it. And then, you know, did some good up there with you. And then I came right back to the swamp and was fishing with a buddy.
And tried it down there. Yeah,
sure did. Yeah. And caught fish, you know, caught three good bass in 30 minutes and he didn't catch any. And I can't say that it was, you know, necessarily the fact that I had a drop shot and he was still fishing a Texas rig, but that was a difference. And I did get bit and he didn't. So I think there's something to
it. Yeah, it was off the, you know, and that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The drop shot is off the bottom. See, and not always are the fish on the bottom. So they'll, you know, they'll suspend a foot or two off the bottom. And that's when a drop shot can be really good. I mean, they'll come up and get it too if they're on the bottom, but and same with a Carolina rig. It's just, it's something you got to try. And, you know, if people that are doing front facing sonar, which I'm not really doing it right this minute, I'll probably do it in the fall, but, you know, you can do a drop shot, but Carolina rig, that's just not something you'd want to do with front facing sonar, really.
Yeah, I can see that. Talk to me a little bit more too. You were talking about how you've been having a lot of success with creature baits right now. I know when me and you went, we were just using worms. And I know here, like, you have a lot of guys that'll switch to creature baits, you know, whenever you have like the new crawfish for the year, you got soft crawfish. Seems right to me to be like a spring thing. People will fish them. I wouldn't imagine y'all get just a whole lot of crawfish up there where you're at. Like, what makes you choose a creature bait over, you know, a lizard or a just a standard worm, split tail worm, curly tail worm? Like, how do you go through narrowing down your options?
Yeah, on a drop shot now, I don't really deviate. I'm pretty much throwing a worm, a robo worm or a trick worm or something like that is what I'm doing. You know, maybe sometimes an 8-inch straight tail worm. But with a Carolina rig, I found that a creature bait can be very good. You know, I used to do lizards years ago, kind of backed off it. There's two baits that I like on Lake Eufaula. One of them is the Z-Crawl, and I like the big Z-Crawl being a creature bait. And then also the crawl that they have, which is the speed crawl, basically. And they came out with a mid-size. So, well, it's really a Magnum. The Magnum speed crawl, and it can be very good. So, I mean, they've always had the speed crawl out, but those two baits on Carolina rig on Eufaula can be excellent. And they'll get a bite when, you know, They don't want a worm or whatever. And a lot of these big fish are just down there on the bottom waiting on something to show up, you know. But they're not in all places. You gotta do your homework now. A little more work involved to get them, you know, to catch them right now, because they're broken up. They're in different packs, basically smaller packs. You know, they were in, you know, 10 fish, maybe 15, 20 fish, you know, schools. Now, you know, they're 10 and 5, you know. So it's just, it's because they're, the bait has suspended, basically. You know, the bait, a month or so ago, they were in big schools. But now the bait is getting in smaller, you know, shad balls. And they're in different columns on the lake. You know, you can see them. Some of them are down deep, and some of them are mid depths. And then you'll even see sometimes they'll be on top of the water first thing in the morning. So this time of year, the bait moves around on you. So you got to pay attention to what's going on.
You know, you talk about paying attention and doing your homework. And I was talking a little bit about how, you know, I went and used a technique that you showed me. And, you know, turned around after doing it one time with somebody who knew how to do it and was catching fish on it. And I want to stress to all of our listeners out there, like a guided fishing trip is a pretty good deal. You know, you figure me and you went out, Groz, and like you talk about having to, you know, identify patterns and pay attention. And I know that's you've burned a lot of gas over the decades, I would imagine, looking at charts and looking for fish and piecing things together. And you know, the cost of a guided trip, going out there and getting to rent for a day, you know, that big, nice boat with that big motor, all those graphs, trolling motor with spot lock, like a whole, you know, miniature sporting goods store full of rods, reels, terminal tackle, lures, like that's and then not to mention, you know, you get somebody who knows all that stuff. You know, I don't know, like if you let me loose in a boat on Lake Eufaula or pick a lake, like Gunnersville, Lake Martin, like, you know, Smith Lake, whatever. And I could probably burn a whole tank of gas before I ever started fishing and may not catch fish, but it, me and you went out there and caught fish. And I can tell you on my home waters, it's not always a guarantee I'm going to catch fish, but that's I got to thinking about it on the ride home. It's a pretty good deal. You know, a lot of people I know, I used to be of the opinion that a guided fishing trip was an expensive way to do things. And I'm about convinced now, the more I think about it and the more trips I go on, that's a pretty good deal for the average Joe to be able to go out there and fish with somebody who just knows where the fish are and has all the gear and has, you know, spent years throwing the spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks, so to speak, you know?
Well, I mean, let's face it, fishing, it doesn't really matter what lake, can be challenging, especially in August. You know, Lake Eufaula, certainly, just like all the other lakes in August, it can be challenging. And, you know, I've been fishing the lake for a long time, and a lot of presentations are seasonal, you know, based on the time of the year and stuff. And it's going to change in the next 2 months. The water temperature is going to get in the 70s, and that's really going to change up how these fish will react. Because really what it does, it moves the bait around. Because the fish going to be where the, you know, the groceries are. Like I said before, it's just you got to stay up with it. But to follow up what you're talking about, a guide, I mean, you know, when I came up, there were no guides. You know, I had to learn the hard way. And so I feel good if I can give back to somebody. Somebody may want to know about offshore fishing, or they want to know about electronics. I mean, you know, certainly I could show them how I do it and so forth and so on. And certain times of year, we won't be doing exactly what we're doing now, because the fish will be shallow. There'll be maybe a top water bite or whatever. But right now, it's an offshore deal still.
You were talking about how, you know, stuff will change over the next couple months. Give our listeners a little sneak peek. What do you think it's going to look like over the next month or so as we start moving from kind of the dog days of summer into that early fall?
You know, what are we, almost halfway through August, and then September could be challenging too. But you get into late September, you'll have some cooler nights, and it'll cool that water down. So I think the magic number is get that water temperature in 70s. I mean, you're gonna have some top water bite. You'll have some shallow, you know, that's when I'll probably fish shallow first, and then I'll move out. You know, first thing morning, I'll be doing shallow. And you know, I love it when the water temperature gets in 70s. I'm talking about coming from 90 to 70. I mean, the fish it's like a light switch. And fall can be really good on you falling on most lakes.
Yeah, I know. I always look forward to the fall. The only thing that gets hard is you start getting into September and October. And me as a hunter, you have to start making the hard decision. Well, do I deer hunt or do I bass fish? And the past several years, I've gotten to where the answer is just both. If I go hunt in the morning, I usually keep a rod and I'll fish my way back. Or if I'm going out in the evening, I'll fish my way to the deer stand. And some good times. Really, really good opportunities.
Well, I went deer hunting one time years ago, and I climbed a tree when I was young, and I just froze to death. I don't even know if I saw a squirrel. And I got down out of that tree. I said, man, let me go get my rods and reel. This ain't for me. So I just never got into it. So, but I don't have anything against anybody that hunts now. I ain't saying that. So.
There we go.
I hunt fish. That's all I do.
That's it. There's some skill sets there that apply to both disciplines for sure. But for the guys who are like you, who not really looking forward to hunting season that much, if they want to look into booking a trip here as the weather cools off, what's a good place to get a hold of you?
You know, always call me at my phone, 706-593-4192. Of course, I'm on Facebook, and I've got my website, grouseguideservice.com. So I try and keep the Facebook up to date. And, you know, there's a lot of good stuff on the website also. So, but, you know, I can help anybody be a better fisherman. And I've helped a lot of folks.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all will take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Buck's Island. Is a family-owned and operated business since 1948. They have new pontoon boats, bass boats, bow riders, and aluminum boats for sale. They love trade-ins for boats and motors. They can rig your boat or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Buck's. They have factory-trained and certified technicians. Visit them at 4500 Highway 77, Southside, Alabama, 35907 zip code, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. Alrighty, guys, next up, we got a very special guest. We have Andrew Monahan with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Andrew, he is a local here to Baldwin County, so he's from my neck of the woods. He serves as the chapter chair for the Southeastern Chapter Board on BHA. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ned.
Absolutely. I know we have kind of run in the same circles, and I know I've interacted with you some on social media. I don't think we've ever met in person, which we'll have to remedy here soon. But tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm originally from Birmingham, but I moved to Baldwin County in 95. Grew up in Birmingham in the city, but I spent my summers on the Coosa River up around Lincoln, Alabama, north part of Logan Martin Lake, and did a lot of fishing on that area of the lake, and learned a little bit about hunting and fishing on the lake and in the areas around there. The only hunting that I mostly did was on private land with my dad's good buddy and business partner. And my brother and I got into hunting throughout the years, and I was really interested in it. When I moved to Baldwin County, a lot of people that I ran into were into hunting. So I had some friends from work who would take me out to private land, and I learned a lot about deer hunting and also went turkey hunting for the first time. As part of that, I also basically moved to Baldwin County because I was into fly fishing, and I really wanted to get into the inshore fly fishing and some of the freshwater as well. So in Baldwin County, we have really unique and plentiful opportunities for public land hunting and fishing, which I didn't really think I had in Birmingham, even though I probably did. I just didn't know about it. And that interest that arose in hunting and fishing and then taking advantage of public land and waters and public access led me to the organization of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers when I decided I wanted to learn how to elk hunt, and came across the organization, looked at the mission statement and the policy objectives of the organization, and realized that they all fit in well with my thinking and what I enjoyed, what I wanted to see happen. So I became involved in establishing the Southeast chapter. Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is an organization that started in the West and has slowly but surely moved into the East and now has chapters throughout the nation. So that's what I'm doing now. I'm an attorney in Baldwin County, and I work all over the state of Alabama, but I am just really interested in public land hunting and fishing, and that's what I do for fun besides my family and family-oriented activities. If I can, I'm going to be out on the water or out there in the woods somewhere.
There we go. Yeah, it's 100% agree with what you're saying. Like here in Baldwin County, we do have some really good access. You've got the Mobile Tensaw Delta WMA, the Upper Delta WMA, and you got the Perdido WMA. You got a couple of tracks of Forever Wild. So for the area to be as developed as it is, you know, there's been a pretty good effort made to keep some wild places in it. And then the fishing access is great. You know, but I believe there's a need for backcountry hunters and anglers in the Southeast, because like I've noticed as I've fished other counties, even if you just pop across the bay and you go to Mobile and you look at how many people are there and you look at how much water there is, but then you look at the amount of water access, it's very different. Like if you just count the boat ramps, you pull out a map of the Delta and you count the boat ramps on the west side of the Mobile Delta and the boat ramps on the east side, I mean, there's three times as many boat ramps. So
that's a big difference.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that we're really into, protecting and keeping public lands and waters public. You've probably seen the t-shirts, public landowner, and that's kind of where people usually will recognize that, seeing it on YouTube or television or whatever. And I think that there are opportunities for BHA in the Southeast to help with those access issues and try to identify things like that. When we were talking earlier, you also mentioned that there are numerous counties in the state where there's no access at all. And that's a shame. It's, you know, public access to hunting and fishing has great societal benefit with mental health and physical health. And it's just something that I feel passionate about. I know you do too. And we hopefully can make a difference in opening up access and opportunity in states, in the state of Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana, where the Southeast chapter is oriented.
Yeah, there's, you know, as far as there being no access at all, I don't know that there's anywhere that I'd say has no access that I've found yet. Like you could always find it, but like if you just go just north of us, you go to Monroe County and you try to find fishing access, if you're not right there on the Alabama River, like if you got the misfortune to be out in, you know, East Monroe County,
right,
there's all kind of little streams, tributaries, but there's no boat ramps, man. And like there's places where you'd be an hour to 2 hours. And I guess maybe I'm just a little bit spoiled, but something I realized when I had a kid, is a lot of times you get to the end of the day and you're tired, you know, like by the time you work, you raise your family, you do your honeydews. You know, when I was in my early 20s, it wasn't that big of a deal to go drive 2 or 3 hours to go do something, but you kind of get into a place where if you can't do it nearby, you just don't do it. And then if you're not doing it regularly, you find other things. And I definitely started realizing when I had a kid and got a little bit busier at work why there's so many people that sit on the couch and watch TV, because sometimes that's all you get
Sure.
time for.
That's right. Yeah. Well,
Well,
we
go ahead.
definitely want to find those places that need some help and get involved in that and encourage people to come to us and get us to help if we can.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know we were talking a little bit off air when we were making our introductions. I know, you know, something that you mentioned is backcountry hunters and anglers is, you know, primarily kind of traditionally like they originated out west where you have a lot of those big public lands, you know, the Federal Land Bureau land management properties. And you know, there's some issues there. I think for anybody who's not familiar with kind of the history of public lands in Alabama and the history of or in the United States and the issues that those lands have faced, Mark Kenyon is a hunter and a writer. He's got a really good book, That Wild Country, that talks about kind of the
Right.
inception of public lands, the opposition when it was founded, the opposition that continues. That history goes all the way up until I think like the 2010s. So it's pretty current as of right now. It's definitely worth a read. Not a long book, not an expensive book. It's a really well-written book. But you know, those are kind of the issues that you see out west. You know, we don't have a lot of really big wilderness areas here. Most of the land is privately held or it's state held. You don't have a lot of federal land. So we were talking a little bit about how it's different how the organization works out west versus here. In the Southeast chapter, can you kind of walk me through the history of how the organization came into the Southeast and kind of what y'all have been doing for the past few years?
Yeah, we started talking about getting a chapter together in 2015, and it was a group of people who had expressed an interest in the organization to the people out in the, nationwide office in Montana. And they got us together. It was a group from Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida. And that was what was comprised as the Southeast chapter originally. So we had quite a few people. I think it was almost 30 people on the first telephone call. And many of those people stayed involved in the organization for many years. Georgia was the first state who broke off from the Southeast chapter to form their own chapter, the Georgia chapter, which wasn't surprising because Atlanta is such a large metropolis and had a lot of people, and they had their own issues and a lot of manpower and people power to be able to address local issues and have their own chapter. Tennessee eventually followed, and then Florida and Arkansas. And Arkansas has become one of the most successful chapters. They have the Black Bear Bonanza every year. I believe it's 3 years now, and they've been really successful with that, with some help from some celebrity Arkansas, and they're, they have a long tradition of black bear hunting up there that we actually don't really have down here in the Southeast so much anymore. But although I would point out that Louisiana just passed they're opening up a black bear season. It's going to be resident only for now, and it'll be a lottery type draw. But talk about a conservation win, recovering the black bear in Louisiana enough to be able to have a hunt is amazing. We're real proud of that effort by the people in Louisiana to make that happen. But anyway, so the Southeast chapter is now just Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. And right now we're still a fairly small group, small organization, and our main goals are to foster relationships with the public and policymakers. So we spend a lot of time with the state and federal policymakers, whether they be Department of Conservation, the Fish and Wildlife Service, the other local conservation organizations who identify and find issues that we can be involved in. One of the ways that we've tried to get our name out there and make some, build some relationships with the local community is by doing a lot of trash cleanups. And, you know, that sounds like it's just, okay, you're picking up trash. Well, when you take a area that is used by the public and it is full of garbage and nobody wants to go there because they're afraid they're going to cut their foot on a tin can or something or some broken glass, and you go out there with a group of people and you pick up an area and you make it look better, and then all of a sudden people realize that it's a beautiful resource and it's a place where you can take your kids and you can go out there and spend the day and not, you just take advantage of it more if it looks good. It is a one day type of commitment that you have to make to an area, but people really appreciate it and it makes a difference. So when you do that sort of thing, you also become more aware of local issues because people who show up at these will see what's going on and they'll tell you, hey, we also need, it'd be nice if we had more access over here, or we've got somebody who's challenging us. We're looking for those type of issues, and that's the kind of thing we want to be involved with. Anything regarding public lands and waters and the healthy habitat and access and opportunity, those are the things that we're interested in. So that's kind of our mission and where we are now. We are still building organization in Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. And in regard to freshwater fishing, because I know that's what people who are listening to this podcast are probably interested in, we also want to maintain access to those areas and make sure that any challenges to access or impediments to access, including things like, it's just trashed. Those are things that we want to mobilize and get involved in. So, I think it was about 2019, we did a big cleanup in the area around Hurricane Alabama down there in that public access area. And we got Baldwin County Solid Waste was nice enough to go put a dumpster up there and cleaned up that area. I don't know if, I know some people in the local community noticed it because they told me about it. But, for a while there, it was really just in terrible shape and felt really good to help out with access there. I would encourage anybody to do that.
I think that's an awesome strategy because, I've noticed that just kind of traveling all through over Alabama. You think about gaining access, protecting access, and you think, either buying property or, talking to your congressman about funding for a program or raising a complaint about an issue being, used in a different way, right? Like hunting property turned into a park or something like that. Like, I think that's where people's mind goes a lot of times, but I can tell you that's a huge issue that I think not a lot of people think through all the way, but I've seen it firsthand where you have, sometimes either it's the state leasing land that maybe it's a boat ramp, maybe it's hunting land, or, maybe it's just something as simple. I've had this conversation with folks with the Alabama Scenic River Trail. You have a sandbar campsite that it's literally just a handshake agreement with whoever owns that property. It's some nice old couple who were like, they've got this property on this scenic creek. They're like, we love the creek. Like, that'd be really cool to have people here camping on our sandbar. Like, y'all can do that. Just keep the place clean. And then 5 years later, the handshake agreement dries up and it's like, well, whatever happened to that? And it's like, man, people trashed it. Like, they got tired of going out there and seeing toilet paper and beer cans and glass bottles. Like, so they were just like, we're not really interested. So that's and I know exactly the area that you're talking about. And I can tell you that there have been, I have had conversations with people out there who saw it get trashed and they were like, I'm trying to see if I can do something to make this not accessible because I'm tired of seeing it trashy. So I'd like to see it shut down. And
That's how
it
you lose it.
happens. Yeah, it does. And then all of a sudden you've lost something. And once you lose it, it's hard to get it back. So I think that's a great kind of low cost, very grassroots way of just making sure that you maintain that access. And I would urge people, whether you do it with a group like a waterkeepers organization, whether you do it with backcountry hunters and anglers, if you just do it yourself, I usually, if I go fishing, there's a 5 gallon bucket sitting in the front passenger seat. And if I pull over at a bridge in Monroe County, Wilcox County, whatever, like I've never found a pullover spot to fish that there wasn't the opportunity to bring a little trash back with you.
Spend a little time and make it better for the next person.
That's it. Yeah. And if you don't believe that you just have kind of a moral duty to do it, just from a selfish point of view, like if an area gets trashed out, a lot of times a gate pops up,
And yep, they're going to put a fence up. That's right.
That's it.
Yeah. We only have about 750,000 acres of public land. And so that's not a lot. Just recently in Jefferson County, U.S. Steel sold almost that much land to a private investor. So, it's you have to watch out for these resources. It's finite. And, they'd like to say they're not making any more of it.
Absolutely.
We appreciate everybody's effort in protecting those access and opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, Andrew, I really enjoyed having you on the show. If folks, you mentioned that it's a small organization, that it's a growing organization. If people are listening in and thinking that that's a cause that they can get behind and they want to join, where can they go to learn more?
Well, if you're on Facebook, we do have a group page, Southeast Chapter Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. You can search for that. We're on Instagram. I believe it's SE Chapter, BHA. Or you could reach out to me at southeastchapter@backcountryhunters.org. That's backcountryhunters.org. southeastchapter@backcountryhunters.org. And if you send an email there, it'll come to me and I'll be able to respond. But also look for us on Facebook. We do have a pretty large community there. Actually, a lot of people are on that Facebook group who are not members apparently, but it's a great place to meet people and talk about issues with public lands and waters.
This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by... All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, that's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list, and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by L&M Marine. Has something for everyone, from small hunting boats to pontoons to bigger bay and hybrid boats for the hardcore angler. You can visit them at 34600 Highway 59 in Stapleton, Alabama, or give them a call at 251-937-1380. Also by Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888-830-POND or info@sepond.com. Also by Fish Bites. Whether you're hitting the sand with set rig or fishing the flats and marshes for speckled trout, redfish, and flounder, Fish Bites has something for you. Check out the full line of scented saltwater and freshwater baits at fishbites.com. Also brought to you by Killer Dock. Killer Dock combines durability, function, and design to uniquely upgrade your entire dock experience. Visit killerdock.com to see more.